Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and this is our third holiday episode of 2020. This whole month, I'm focusing on things that bring me, and hopefully you, joy. Our first episode was with Nick Hinton and our conspiratorial talk, and the second was with Andrew Wiggins and his poker and fantasy sports uprises. I've had a couple of cancellations and postponements this month, so I decided to take a step back and look at something that has brought me joy and inspiration for a long time now, cannabis. I want to thank my friend Chris for stepping up this week and talking to me about our shared passion for this amazing plant. I had a blast, and I hope you do too. More on our conversation in a bit. First, I want to thank everyone who is listening now or who has already listened to an episode. It's been an incredible experience this far. And while the response has been overwhelmingly positive, it's not generating any revenue yet, and I've still got bills to pay. I'm not sure what the timing is going to be like on these next few episodes, but we may be dark for Christmas Eve at this point. I'm still trying to work on a special episode for New Year's Eve, but just getting an episode posted may be the special part of it. I definitely appreciate all of you listeners out there bearing with any of these early bumps. I'll keep doing my best to bring you new episodes each week. If you have suggestions for guests or topics, please email me from our website or contact me on Twitter at Awaken Exchanges. I hope to have a full, diverse, and interesting schedule for 2021, so I hope you join us here every week. Another person I want to thank is this week's guest, Chris Moomy. I've known Chris for nearly a decade now, and his passion for cannabis might be second to none. Despite my large number of contacts in the industry, I've never seen someone with such a wide variety of knowledge and interest in this plant. He may have even smoked more cannabis than I have, he definitely has a more refined cannabis palate, and he follows as many of the growing and extracting technologies as he can. I used to think I had a fairly rounded out cannabis knowledge base, and then I had an in-depth conversation with Chris and realized how much I wasn't following nowadays. He's currently employed as an extractor at one of the biggest extraction companies in Portland. He also is one of the most talented photographers that I know, especially when it comes to cannabis pictures. You can find him at PNW_flower_power on Instagram if you want to explore more. Before we get to the interview, here's a brief rundown of our sponsors. As always, I want to thank all of you personally for your support. Just listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep providing the best content that I can. If you have the means and would like to contribute personally, please take a look at our Patreon page, where you will get access to exclusive content and deals for our truly dedicated fans. There are already 3 bonus videos available as I record this, and more are on the way. As for our other sponsors, Awaken Vapes was the first of the Awaken brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only, high-terpene vape products since 2019. Genesis Farms has been making the highest quality medicinal RSO, among many other fantastic products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And last but not least, the Carmel Corn Company, still bringing you Carmel Corn the way it was meant to be. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe on YouTube, or wherever else you're listening. Also, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I know that every podcast says it, but that's because it really does spread the word. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. All right, now, stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal. Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products, made with love and care. Community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just the beginning of what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state. Their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner coming back for more. Find them on Facebook and Instagram, and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges. It's episode number 3. The Carmel Corn Company is bringing you Carmel Corn the way it was meant to be, made with premium ingredients in small, handcrafted batches and completely gluten-free. Their flavors include original, roasted cashew, salted almond, mixed nut, spicy sriracha, white morsel macadamia, peanut butter, butterscotch, and my personal favorites, chocolate drizzle and raspberry caramel apple. I can't say enough about how delicious this caramel corn is. It makes a great gift any time of the year. You can find them for sale in Portland area market of choice locations and hopefully again online soon when they get stocked back up. Please visit www.caramelcorncompany.com for more information today. And remember, buying local supports small businesses and keeps your money building your community. Last but not least, Awaken Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vapes since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines and no prescribed pills helped alleviate the symptoms. Having only tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. Despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban and then a global health crisis with COVID, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our three varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with the custom blended effect profiles. Check back at www.awakenedvapes.com for any updates, and you can always email us about wholesaling or white labeling opportunities. Hit record while it's 4:20 because we're pretty much right there.
I like it.
All right. Welcome to Awakened Exchanges. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So for those in our audience that are unfamiliar with you, why don't you tell me your name and what you do?
My name is Chris. I am one of the assistant extractors out at Clay Wolf, and I blast oil for a living.
And I know we're going to have a long conversation about it. So how'd you first get involved with cannabis?
I got involved with cannabis when I was about 26, so that makes it about 7 years ago now. I was on a bunch of different medications at the time. I really didn't feel like a great person. I kind of just sat around the house all day like a zombie and was very unproductive with my life. One of my friends actually introduced me to it, and he's like, well, have you ever tried smoking? No, not at all. So I smoked, and just kind of the initial relaxation and just release that it gave me from all the tension and anxiety was crazy. And I think it was within 2 months I had weaned myself off medication and switched over to having my OMMP card and using cannabis to self-medicate.
Wow. So 26, that's what, 7 years ago?
Yeah.
You have amassed such a vast knowledge of cannabis shit over the last 7 years.
Yeah, I kind of jumped head on into it. I've never really been one to half-ass anything, so it was something that I knew if I wanted to be able to properly, what's the word that I'm looking for? I guess treat myself. I needed to understand what I was doing to my body more so than just, oh, I'm going to go get stoned.
Yeah.
And that seemed to kind of just be the popular thing at the time. There was a lot of people that were legitimately using OMMP cards for that, but there was also some that were definitely not.
It was probably 50-50 back in the, about 2010.
And then I had kind of a really bad taste in my mouth after dealing with the OMMP grower side of it, because it's just not anything like what I was expecting it to be.
Unless you can grow your own, it's difficult to find a good one.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I ended up doing, was just branching off and deciding, okay, I'm going to do this. It was very shady at first. I definitely made a lot of mistakes at the beginning, but I learned a lot, and it's gotten me to where I'm at now.
So what was the first one you grew?
The first strain I grew?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was a long time ago. It was Girl Scout cookies, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. It was one of the forum cuts. It hadn't been out very long at the time, and I had a friend that had happened to come across the cut of it, and I tried it out. It did absolutely terrible. it was hilariously underfed. There was so many different pH issues with the soil that I was using that it was miraculous that it even made it to week 8 of flower. But
it made it.
It made it. I kind of got blessed with a green thumb, so that really helped. But I have very little horticulture experience outside of taking it in high school, and everything was just research, research, research. I got in with a really good group at the beginning of growing that taught me so much. The Nectar for the Gods growers group on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
Learned a lot of really useful information from them, and in doing so, just kind of got into the organic side of it and started learning more about that, microbes, beneficial bacteria, things like that, that just don't add a whole bunch of salt to your soil and give you a much cleaner product at the end, much smoother smoke. So it was just kind of learning the whole process behind. It's just more so just going out and picking a plant and trying to grow it. You have to figure out the nuances between each individual strain, how they differ, what makes them differ, and what you're looking for as an end result.
I know I got blessed by finding Sean from Genesis Farms really early on. He helped me make my first soil, so I basically could feed it just water and it would live through the 8 weeks.
You're lucky. It took me a lot of hours of trying to sort through useless information on the internet to weed out what was correct and what was incorrect. And I guess that's why I attribute so much to getting into that Nectar group as early as I did, because it really kind of gave me a solid base to learn from, to kind of expand on, that wasn't a whole bunch of misinformation like what you would see on hemp.com or something like that. Like, just for instance, it's one of those things that it's more reliable to get the information from the people that are actually growing the plants versus a guy that just went out and interviewed a grower and got their information that way.
Yeah, absolutely. If Girl Scout cookies was your first attempt at growing, you had how far into your OMMP process was that?
That was on my second card. My first OMMP card I had a grower assigned to it, and it was an absolute nightmare. I'm almost 100% positive that the guy was actually shipping his material down to Texas as frequently as he could.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, that was fun. I ended up pulling my card about 3 months from the end of it expiring, and I just ended up not doing anything. And then the following year, I only had a 3-plant garden. I had an OG Kush that died, because that to date is the most finicky strain that I've tried to grow.
Completed it once, and it still needed 2 more weeks.
Yeah, I made it a few weeks into flower, and I think it was just so overwatered, and the pH was really low. So.
Yeah.
So the 2 Girl Scout cookies made it. The yield was absolutely terrible on them. I actually found out that's kind of just one of the things about growing Girl Scout cookies, at least some of the original cuts, were that they just don't yield well. They do much better indoors. They don't really like being outside that much, especially when it gets a little colder. But yeah, since then I've...
And they're more sativa hybrid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe a 70-30, if I'm not mistaken. Over the years, it's just kind of progressed into trying more of kind of the exotic side of a lot of the breeders out there. I guess you'd call it the higher end ones. And I found some really, really good stuff over the years that I wish I still had a hold of, but now I'm going to end up starting from scratch again when I eventually get some space to start growing.
Well, I'm looking forward to you getting some space to grow again.
You and me both.
In the OMMP days, were you going to a dispensary most of the time then to get weed?
Yeah. So back in the day, Cherry City Compassion in Salem, they had a slightly different location than they do now. They had a great staff there that just did an amazing job and I felt welcome. So that's just kind of where I went to get my weed. I didn't need the street plug anymore because I was like, oh, I'm getting tested stuff and it's not that expensive. So why not?
You stayed with them pretty consistently?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I definitely, like, when I first was able to buy weed with having the OMMP card, I kind of went a little crazy with it because I was like, I can go into all of the weed stores.
Of course, so you got to try them all out, right?
I went into as many as I possibly could. And back at the time, it was also kind of cool because the first time you went in, you usually got like a free pre-roll or discount on your purchase. So
yeah,
like I ended up going home with a lot of extra free weed. And at the time, that was never a bad thing. And
free weed is still never a bad thing.
Yeah. And kind of over the course of all of this going on, I was working pretty physical labor jobs. I think at the time I was detailing cars. And I had some fun with it, but it just, I didn't really feel like it was my thing. Like, I love cars, don't get me wrong, but just the intricacies and the processes that go into detailing a car are not good for someone with a short attention span like me, I guess.
And that's not what you love about cars.
No, I like doing really stupid things and driving really fast in them.
What?
But I didn't see anything there, so I switched from doing that to working in a warehouse for a couple of years just because that was what I had to do to make money. And I don't know, I felt like I was stuck, dead end, wasn't really going anywhere, and I didn't really know what to do. I had been to welding school, and that ended up not working out. My back decided that that wasn't going to be something that I was going to do forever.
Yeah.
And I decided instead of spending a bunch of money on finishing up weld school and going into a field that I probably wasn't going to be able to work more than a couple of years, that just trying to find a change of career was probably best. And doing the warehouse thing, I was like, well, it's okay, but I hate getting up and going to work every day. It kind of sucks.
Soul sucking.
Yeah. And at the time I was living out in Almsville, and there was a little shop out in Turner called Homegrown Remedies.
Yeah.
That, was my regular store at this point. And I had been going in there enough that, when was this? This was last summer. I asked the manager there, like, what do I need to do to be a butt tender here? And she's like, well, you need to get your OLCC workers permit. So that I went and did that. I got an interview there, and I had also been applying at a couple other places, and I had actually had an interview at Mr. Nice Guy as well.
Oh yeah. I actually remember that.
Yeah. So I went to work for Mr. Nice Guy for about 3 months. I didn't really like it. It wasn't a fit for me. And after working there for a couple months, it was just something that I wasn't really enjoying. And I had gotten the offer at Homegrown as well. So I decided to go back and see if they would take me back. So I went crawling back on my hands and knees and was like, please take me back. And Sasha was absolutely amazing. She's like, yeah, we'll see if we can get you back in the next open position. So I think it was like 3 weeks of me calling and harassing her almost every other day, seeing if she had job openings yet. And she's finally like, yeah, you can start. And I ended up starting the day after my birthday last year.
And nice birthday present.
Yeah, to me, it was the best birthday present ever. I was like, I got to go sell pot. Like, and I'm paying taxes on it.
And you actually liked the people that you were working
with.
Oh,
yeah. It was a good fit. It was an absolutely amazing crew. We got to work with a lot of really good vendors as well. Deschutes Growery, Winberry, Phantom Farms. There's so many more to list. Mothership Farms that are all just really, really great to work with. The people that I worked with there were absolutely phenomenal. I'm still friends with most of them. We talk on a really regular basis. But I had some really bad stuff happen earlier this year. I lost my mom and I got out of a 7-year relationship, and it was just time for a change. And I decided to put my resignation in at Homegrown and move up to Portland. And after I got up here, there was a couple different options that I was looking at, and ended up getting offered a position at Clay Wolf, thanks to someone that I know. And I started working for them as a packager and quickly moved up to an assistant extractor. I think it was like 3 weeks after I started there, they offered me the position. And I absolutely jumped at it. Like, this is something that I thought was going to happen maybe a year or two down the road.
Hey, well, and you displayed the knowledge. You'd been talking to the right people, asking the right questions.
Extracting was something that I honestly had been wanting to get into just because it's I smoke dabs all the time. So it was honestly something that I had already had a huge interest in. And I had a friend on the black market that taught me quite a bit about how to blast on the black market. But thankfully, it wasn't open blasting. That was one thing I'm glad I never really learned. but I picked up a lot of knowledge from him, and I just kind of went for it. It was an opportunity, and I absolutely jumped at it. And I love what I do every day when I get up and go to work. I wake up at 5:30 in the morning, and I've never been upset about it once since I had to start doing it. And that's if you had asked me 10 years ago to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go to work, not happening. So it's nice that I get to do that. And I work with a great group of people there. They're definitely passionate about what they do. They love what they do. So it is definitely fun getting up and going.
Well, that's impressive from your first grow to where you're at now. What was your most successful grow?
I would say that was probably my most recent. I harvested that one right before I moved up to Portland. So that would have been right at the beginning of fall. I think it was September 15th or somewhere around there that we harvested.
How many plants did you get to harvest finally?
That one was four. We had what was in that garden. We had purple punch, duct tape, and white Tahoe cookies, all from Archive. And then we also had, I'm trying to remember what that one was. It's purple tangy crossed with orange creamsicle number five. It was called Ting. That was from MTG Seeds. That was a freebie that we had actually gotten. That one was blew me away. Threw some really fantastic colors. The smell was unreal.
I wonder if it was a low test number kind of a thing, so they didn't, you know, market it a lot.
I think it was. It didn't look like it was super
THC percentage.
I know. And honestly, like when everyone loves growing triked out plants. Like it's really cool because all your friends are like, "Oh my god, your weed's dank," but it doesn't have to be the frostiest thing in the world. I've seen a lot of lower testing strains that are anywhere between 15% and 20% that were absolutely phenomenal. Deschutes Growery is working with a strain called Bugatti right now, and that one, when they first put it out, I think it tested at like 15.5% or 16%, but it was absolutely stellar.
And what do you attribute that to?
I honestly attribute that to the terpene profile of the plant and just a solid genetic base.
Amen.
Coming from people that knew how to grow good weed. Those guys do an absolutely amazing job.
More people need to be educated about the terpenes and the entourage effect rather than just looking for that high THC number.
Yeah, you can go smoke as much THCA crystalline as you want, but you're going to smoke 5 grams of it a day because you're going to get high, and 20 minutes later you're not going to be high anymore, and you're getting nothing from it. Whereas when you smoke a full spectrum either extract or you're smoking flower that's grown in a proper manner, you're getting a good quality product. And especially with farms like Deschutes, they strive for consistency. So they do as much testing as they can. They're constantly striving for the best that they can get out of what they're doing. And having that type of a mentality in what you're putting onto a market is of the utmost importance, because as we all know, the biggest thing with getting a good quality medicine on the market is consistency. Because if you put one batch on the market and it's completely different than the next batch you put on the market, are you really getting the same effect from it? Are you really getting the same quality and consistency that you should be? Because with people using this as a medication, or they're using it for sleep, or they're using it for anxiety, having variances like that are going to change how these things affect people. And you might get one strain one time and then go get it 6 months later and it affects you a completely different way, even though it's from the same grower. Why? because there's variances in growing conditions. It's an agricultural product, and having really tight parameters on what you're doing while you're growing cannabis is important to getting an end result that's very similar to the previous.
There's one farm that I used to work with. They had, I think, four different rooms, and they only grew platinum Girl Scout cookies. And that's it. PGSC nonstop. Whenever they harvested 15 pounds of it and had it come out and get tested for OLCC. Sometimes they did 30 pounds of it, and then that was it.
If they do it right, then they do it right. And I bet they sold 15 pounds of it every time they harvested
it. It was always pre-sold. It was always out there. It was some of the best PGSC I've ever seen. Yeah, 10-4 farms. I'll go ahead and put that out there. So, yeah, they grow very premium Platinum Girl Scout cookies.
It's always nice when you get a really consistent product because you know what you're getting when you go in for it. And I think that's going to be the biggest bonus to having a successful cannabis company is people are able to get that control down. So when Absolutely. Someone goes in and buys this product a year down the road, because that was one thing we did have happen a lot is we'd have customers come in and they'd look for the same strain, but this was 6 months before. And
yeah,
we're at a dispensary, so I mean, we go through flower really quickly. It's and
even if you had that strain at that point, it probably wasn't by the same grower.
Yeah, so having that consistency there is really nice, because when you have customers like that that are not consistent users and use this on a semi-regular basis to help when they need it, having that same consistency is paramount, because that those people need what they're buying. So getting those control parameters down are going to be extremely important.
So if you had if you had your ideal growing conditions, what kind of a setup would you want to be working with?
If I had the perfect setup, I would do an indoor grow, organic no-till soil that's pre-mixed with specific ratios of soil amendments, anything from bone meal, worm castings, crab shrimp meal. There's so many different things that you can try and customize mixes with. Doing a living soil, I think, would be where I would start, and then from there going with a good quality LED light.
Really, LED?
I mean, obviously, there's arguments both ways. You could go LEC, double-ended high-pressure sodium.
LEC.
I know. honestly, it's just the amount of electricity and the impact that it's having on the environment.
I mean, it's very good point. Easier to be green with an LED.
It is. And at that point, you could probably also look at doing solar panels for the LEDs. That way, you're not adding any type of negative environmental impact to running something like that.
Would you consider like a light depth greenhouse with an added light situation as indoor for you? Or would you still want a smaller indoor space? I mean, space?
Light depth is light depth.
Yeah, yeah.
Ideally I would prefer indoor, just because you can control it that much easier.
Everything in the environment can be controlled yeah. easier.
Inside. And when you can control things like that, you can get consistency. And, especially like the biggest thing is just getting your soil ratios down and picking the right strains. Some strains are really heavy calcium feeders, like the Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah.
Those things eat calcium like it's candy. So finding what works for you, what your garden's goals are. If you just want to grow really dank weed, then you can just grow really dank weed. If you want to pheno hunt through 200 seeds and search for that magic one that's in there, then you can do that. I also think that tiered gardening is a definite bonus to something like that, because you're getting better consistency throughout everything. That is one downside to normal tent growing that a lot of people out there do is, your canopy can only go one of two ways. You can either let your plants grow up towards the lights, or you can try and do a sea of green.
Yeah.
And that just requires a lot of extra time doing plant training and manipulation of the plant's normal growth pattern. So with that, you're able to get a lot better consistency out of it, or you can grow plants just the normal way and top and super crop them. And
I think scrogging versus sea of grain. But what were you gonna say on the other?
I realized I smoked a little bit before we started, so.
Hey, yeah, you had to. I mean, it was 420.
But yeah, doing vertical tier, I think at this point would probably be my choice at going for a consistent route. Just because you're getting good nug size, you don't have to worry about your lowers being done a week or two after your uppers. There's not B buds and giant A buds. It's just, it's a good consistent quality product. And I think you're also able to control what's happening a little bit better with that, because if you have one plant that's struggling or two plants that are struggling, you know that it's just those one or two plants. Whereas if you have all of them struggling, you know, okay, well, I'm doing something wrong. I need to figure out what's going on, and you can start diagnosing from there.
Have you ever considered side lighting for the lower nugs, especially now with like the lower LEDs?
It's kind of hard to mount them.
Yeah.
And get them to stay in one place. And then also cooling is an issue too, especially if you're in a tent, because you only have so much room.
Oh yeah. Gotcha.
I mean, my last grow was in a 5x5 tent for flower, and I had a 4x4 for veg, and I did not have anywhere near enough room in there.
No. That's barely enough to do. Yeah.
I waited about a week too long to put them into flower because I had, also waited too long to transplant them, so I had to wait a little bit for the roots to get settled after transplant before I put them into flower. And
can't shock them twice in a row.
Yeah, and I had colas almost up to the light in there.
So, and not necessarily a bad thing, but
I mean, it wasn't. But it was a little tight on room when we were trying to get everything out of there, because I had nets up in there too. So it was just like trying to slowly cut our way through this forest of weed inside the tent. So it wasn't a bad time, but it was definitely tedious work.
All right, so that was your growing experience. Now you're talking extraction is what you wanted to get into.
Correct.
What have you been doing on the extraction side right now?
So right now, primarily what we do is live resin, diamonds, and sauce. We'll bring material in. We will run it through the machine. It gets out, goes through its crashing period, and then after that, it gets purged. And then goes over and gets tested from there. And then after it's tested, it goes out.
So live resin, diamonds, and sauce, is that pretty much exclusively what you guys have been doing at this point?
That's a lot of what we do. We also run some other material that is not like top shelf by any means, but we do run that as well whenever we...
Material has to get run.
Yeah. If we're running through downtime and we don't have any live plant material there because, you know, it's an agricultural product, then we'll run some trim or some other stuff or whatever else we have laying around.
I know you guys partner with farms for a lot of that material, but what about shatters? Do you guys do any of that anymore?
Yeah, we have some going out right now. I think they're in the process of getting tested, or we're waiting for results on those.
Fairly stable stuff, or
it's more of a snap and pull. We don't tend to turn the ovens up very high when we're letting the stuff sit. So
preserves a little bit more of the terpene profile as well. Yeah.
High temps are bad for terpenes, especially when you're purging.
Yeah.
So we try not to go too high on that.
So what kind of machines are you running right now?
So I can't get super into
no specific brands
what all we
or
have it there. We do have a precision machine. I just don't know how much I can disclose about this because I did sign an NDA. But yeah, it works great. It does exactly what we need it to.
If you were building a dream machine, is there something you would add to what you've got in-house?
I mean, if I was playing with what I had now and I had the option, I would like to have a CRC just to kind of play around with it a little bit and see what I could do with it.
Can you tell us what a CRC is?
CRC is a color remediation cylinder. It is an additional cylinder that's attached between the D-Wax and the collection pot. And it is usually full of some type of filtering media that the product is run through, and it can do a bunch of different things to what you're running through.
It pulls depending out on how fats, you do lipids, it,
chlorophyll. Yeah. There's also bleaching agents that strip all the color out of it, so it turns it this really weird white color.
Wow, that seems a little odd.
I mean, I've had several batches of like completely bleached material, and it just kind of it with extraction. It depends on what you start with.
Yeah. So that's like lower grade material. They just wanted to get a clean THC product out there.
They can do that. Absolutely. There's companies out there that are definitely trying to stay away from just completely bleaching the ever living crap out of it. They're trying to work more on just pulling some of the like harsher stuff out, like chlorophyll, if there's any residual, if they're running live material. That tends to lead to a lot of harshness in what you're smoking. And then with fats and lipids, as long as you're running it through a proper D-Wax process, then you should be pretty okay with that. But it would just be nice, I guess, with what I'm currently doing. Yeah, to have that added filtration in there. Everyone likes nice light colored diamonds and sauce and those nice clear rocks in there. So, personally, I would like to play with one, but I don't use one now, which I don't mind at all because it's full spectrum material, or the end result is a full spectrum material that we are getting really good quality out of. So I can't be too upset about it.
No, absolutely not.
And I shouldn't say like completely full spectrum, but it's close enough.
As for this being what you wanted for the ideal extraction unit, I know you're talking about being here for a couple of years, really learning the side of the process. Would you then want a full-size kind of farm and processor kind of thing?
Ideally, if I had my goal is honestly to run a micro-tier facility that specializes in making hash rosin.
Wow, okay.
I love all types of extraction, everything from, there was this tech that came out a couple of years ago that was just kind of an internet troll that turned into something viral that was, what are those things called? French press tech or something like that. They were using coffee steamers to try and pull stuff out of cannabis flower. And yeah, it was an entertaining 2 weeks. Definitely had some popcorn. But just every different type of extraction that is currently around, I want to learn as much about it as I can. It's just something I'm passionate about.
It's just a personal knowledge thing.
Yeah. I tend to dive head on into things, like I said earlier, and it's just, this is where my brain's wanting to go right now. I want to learn it all. I played with rosin way back in the day and then recently as well. We're a long ways from a hair straightener and a C-clamp. But running a micro-tier farm would be amazing. That way I can kind of experience every aspect of things all the way from seed to a finished solventless product.
And how would you pick your strains going into the farm?
At that point, it's kind of just seeing what you're getting from your end result and setting a goal for yourself. What do you want? What is the ultimate goal of you doing this? Do you just want to put the best rosin you possibly can on the market and follow the trends of the market and do what the people want? Or do you pursue what you think is a good end product?
Personally, I have to just put a little vote in there. I mean, if you're running a micro tier, you're not nearly as responsible to the whims of the end users. You could really get by putting out a little bit of what you're passionate about.
Absolutely. But you also definitely take time to establish a name for yourself too. And with doing something like that, you really got to set the bar. So going in with a plan is definitely the utmost importance. And at the end of the day, you have got to know what you are doing. We learned very early on in Oregon's market that a lot of people would much rather learn how to grow hemp than try to grow cannabis because it didn't really turn out too well for them. And I mean, more power to them. There's definitely a lot of room opening up in the hemp markets right now, but, in terms of cannabis, like, you've got to want the best all the time if you want to do the right thing. And striving for that every day while you're at work is what you've got to do to be able to make that happen. I feel like having that micro tier, while it would definitely be more of what my end goal would want, but I also definitely want to listen to the customer base and the people that are consuming the product,
especially when you're building the brand.
Definitely. And one thing that I've noticed is there is certain strains that are meant to be made into rosin. They do really well with it, and there are other strains that just probably should be left alone.
Explain.
They kind of turn weird colors. They do weird things if they're not treated properly after they're pressed. They don't yield very well during the actual hash making process.
Mm-hmm.
There's just nuances between strains. Some of them just don't like being turned into hash. Some of them do. Some yield really well, and you get a really nice end product.
Well, and the rosin is the first step in some of the processes. You could go, a lot of people have been making batter as a more stable version, last a little bit longer.
I think it's easier to use the material. I mean, I personally love high terpene stuff, so when you see like 10, 15% terps, I'm like, ooh, yeah, give it to me. and I know that I might not be the only one, but that's just personally what I like. But with rosin, I think you're able to get more out of what you're smoking. It's just for me personally. I had never had rosin that was actually made from hash up until about a year ago. And the first time I smoked it, it was like smoking dabs all over again. It was just such a different high. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Now I know why it's ridiculously expensive. But just the flavor, the whole experience around it, it just was like, oh my God.
You have a favorite rosin company currently, or a couple?
If I was going out to buy a gram of rosin right now, I would probably go with Archive or
Love Archive. Bo's Nose. Shout out. Oh, Bo's Nose, yeah.
They do absolutely phenomenal. I don't know what they've got going on over there, but it's working for them. And then Archive, those are a solid group of guys. I don't know any of them personally, but I've smoked a lot of their rosin, and I can tell that they definitely know what they're doing.
I actually do know a few of them personally, and they absolutely know what the fuck they're doing.
I've also grown several of their strains before, and I've smoked several of those strains quite a bit, and I am not disappointed with any of it. So they can keep doing what they're doing, and I'm not gonna knock them for it.
Their big boss used to give me samples when I'd come over and see him every once in a while, so I'd get to try some of the new stuff coming out, and I swear, everybody was clamoring for it whenever they were over at the house.
Oh yeah, that Moonbell 112 that they have, oh my God.
Yeah.
I could crawl up inside that jar and live there and never be upset.
I have another friend who, their dirty taxi, he was just, could not get over that. Let's see, Bo's Nose. Have you tried any of their product at this point?
I have recently. They just did a run of, God, I can't remember what it was. I think it was papaya something or another.
Mm.
I can't remember.
Those papaya terps are delicious, though.
Yeah. I kind of want to go try and see what it was now. one of my coworkers brought it in, and oh, yeah, it was something special. More so over the summer. I definitely balled out over the summer and spent a lot of money on oil.
Sometimes you got to treat yourself, though.
Oh, yeah. You got to treat yourself all the time, especially if you're out there slaving away right now. Like, you've got to make sure that you're taking care of yourself.
Absolutely. COVID's no joke. You got to have some. I mean, we can't go anywhere. We might as well enjoy ourselves where we're at, right?
You know where I go on vacation? I go on vacation in my car with myself.
I like it.
At this point, I'm ready for a vaccine. It can have a microchip in it. I don't care if it means I got to go get drunk at RB or at
You're so low on the list, though.
I don't even care. I'm ready.
So what about, there's another of my favorites I want to mention, Happy Cabbage.
I do really like their stuff. It's not something that I've had a ton of experience with because it is very expensive.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely stellar. The Sumo oranges that they have is one of my favorite rosins that I've actually had. It's always top shelf quality. It's always consistent. I have nothing but good things to say about it.
So I think the difference for me with Happy Cabbage is they weren't always starting with their own product, whereas Archive always was starting with top-notch flower from the top-notch genetics that they were growing themselves.
And I think that's one thing that they've kind of set for themselves. Archive is very much branding itself as its own individual thing, and it's definitely working for them. They're doing great, at least from an outside perspective. I mean, I obviously don't know them internally or what's going on there, but like just from what I'm seeing from an outside perspective, Archive should keep doing what they're doing because it's working.
I wish them a lot of success in their plans for the rest of the state of Oregon and hope they keep up their quality as much as they do here because, it's just been top-notch from day one.
Yeah, but like with other extraction companies, like they all, I mean, unless it's an in-house only run, most of them work with other farms and source their material that way.
What I will say about Happy Cabbage is they do use a lot of their own product a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And you can tell the difference. It is, they process it amazingly.
Yes. What they're doing is definitely working. They get a great end result on everything that I've had from them.
Yeah, I can't think of a single... Well, there's one terp profile that they put out, and I cannot remember what it is.
Oh, give me a second. I'll remember it.
It's just the funkiest smelling stuff, though.
It was a Thai something, I think.
Yeah. I don't know what it was, but it smelled like foot or something.
But then again, they also... Like, I have a friend that loves GMO.
I know.
I am not about GMO. Like, that stuff smells like straight... asshole.
You just don't like the garlic side of
it, right? I don't. It's definitely not my preferred terp profile.
Which, by the way, GMO is not genetically modified organism.
No, it stands for garlic, mushroom, and olive, I believe.
Yeah.
If that's your thing, I'm not going to knock you for it, but you ain't going to catch me smoking that shit.
That's like, I know some people who really love the skunk profiles.
That's one of my all-time favorite strains is that original Roadkill Skunk. I absolutely love it, but there's something about that GMO that just, like, it smells like a dead raccoon's asshole.
Something along those lines, yeah.
And I think if you like that stanky, stanky good, that's on you. Like, do your thing, but...
I figure if I take the dab hot enough, I don't normally taste that. So,
yeah, you can burn the terp out of it. Going back to the 2013 days when you torched that shit on a red hot, on a red hot titanium nail, not a care in the world.
All right. So, besides those companies right there, what else in the cannabis field would you like to be exploring?
I'm honestly just kind of doing what I want to do right now. I want to learn extraction. I want to really this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I know it doesn't sound very ambitious, but like
cannabis is a good field nowadays.
I don't just always want to blast things. I mean, obviously I have the higher ambitions for myself, but for at least the next 10, 20 years, like this is probably what I'm going to be doing is blasting stuff. And I'm totally okay with that. I enjoy what I do at work.
You like the intricacies. You like being able to know the machines.
There's a process, but it's also a process that is manipulated and you're doing your thing with it. There's so many great extract artists out there that are doing phenomenal things in this industry that
it's hard to even like put myself anywhere near that because I don't feel that I'm in that league. Like there's guys out there that have master's degrees in organic chemistry that are out there blasting stuff and they're doing stuff that I can't even understand yet. But
that thirst for knowledge is
already for knowledge is there and I'm going for it. It might not be a PhD, but I'm going to learn it doing it the old fashioned way.
Autodidact is a very worthy type of learning. I mean, teaching yourself something is a lot of hard work, but sometimes comes with the most intimate understanding.
And I think that's what I enjoy about it is I feel like I'm learning it for myself first and then for everyone else second, because I'm still on that hunt. Like it's still that first time that I smoked when I was 26, like that feeling is still there. Like I need to learn more about this. And, that's something I try to do every day is just what can I learn today about this that I didn't know yesterday? What can I do to make this better than it was yesterday? Just constantly striving to learn more about what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, and the nuances between the minute changes that go into what I do on a day-to-day basis. If I let this soak for an extra minute, is it going to matter? If I let this, it's just nice getting to learn all of that and having someone as an extractor that actually knows what they're doing in a really, really good, solid way. It's nice being able to learn from someone that
can put out a good product.
Yeah, that knows what they're doing and has no problem teaching you.
That is actually fairly rare until you get into a company with somebody. There's not a lot of talk because there's a lot of proprietary knowledge and information that goes on to making every individual product out there.
Oh, yeah. I think that's pretty much a standard anymore in this industry. Like if you work for a company that has made a name for itself, you're signing an NDA when you go to work for them. And that's just how it is. I mean, knowing a proprietary thing is what gives some of these companies a leg up in the world. Like there's a huge difference between, like, I don't know if you smoke very many infused pre-rolls, but, CB Discovery has a proprietary process for making their pre-rolls and whatever they do with that, it's phenomenal. Like they smoke really, really well, but getting those things down in this industry is what's making these companies stand out like that. So they want to guard it very, very closely.
Well, to get product like that actually tests consistently and that you can actually get to the market because there's so much variability in pre-rolls in general.
Oh, yeah.
Is just a pain in the ass.
I'm honestly kind of expecting in the next 10 years you're going to start seeing a lot more of a corporate espionage type thing start happening in the cannabis industry just because there's going to be a lot of new tech developed over the next 10 years that's going to be worth a lot of money. We're still in the baby stages of cannabis and
I always forget that.
Like I know it's weird because we've been in a legal state for a long time now.
Yeah.
Almost a decade.
Yeah.
And seeing how far it's come now, but at the end of the day you still have to think like there's still places where if you haven't ate the weed in your hand, you're going to jail.
It's just crazy that we have so many people locked up in this country for fucking marijuana. It's
mind numbing.
Yeah.
And it's sad because some of these people are just trying to help themselves be productive members of society. Not everyone out there's a skeezy stoner that's just trying to get their next high. Like for me, this plan has helped me become a completely different person. I'm not dysfunctional at home anymore because I'm on mood stabilizers or I'm on this or I'm on that. I get a good consistent feeling from what I'm getting out of cannabis that I am able to manage what's going on my own. I don't need a medication to help control I call it control because it made me feel like a zombie. Like some of that stuff was just really heavy and I felt so unproductive that being able to get up and go to work and have a full-time job now and
you felt numbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I like being able to get up and go to work and do the things that I am passionate about, and having the ability to do that because of a plant is all I need.
So that's awesome.
I'm going to keep chasing the dragon until I get it. Or, well, die trying.
Green dragon. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. So we're getting a little bit farther into this. Cannabis is obviously one of your major passions. Normally I try and pull another passion or something out from people here. You have anything else you geek out on?
Oh, dogs.
Dogs is where you went with it.
Yeah. We're going to throw a little curveball.
All right. Let's hear. So what about dogs?
Dogs for me started at a really young age. I know we just kind of went from left field. I grew up in a hunting home. So from the time, as literally as young as I can remember, we went out hunting, we went out trapping. So I got exposed to working dogs very early on. We had coon dogs, bird dogs, and they were all really well trained. So just kind of growing up around that, you pick up on it, and it was something that I fell in love with. I never really went for titles or anything like that. And then I think it was about 5 years ago, at the time, my girlfriend, her brother got a chocolate lab, and he ended up not wanting it after about 6 months of it being a puppy, and decided that he didn't want to do anything with it. So I took the opportunity and started training the dog, and we eventually went to start doing dock diving because that was something that he really enjoyed. And I got my first sport title, I think it was in 2018.
Wow.
Dock diving, and then we started doing lure coursing as well. And yeah,
so it's just the passion of actually working with the dogs, training them how to,
for me, it's the interaction. I didn't have the greatest upbringing. I mean, while I did have dogs around all the time,
they were an outlet.
I very much had a father that was not the smartest when it came to teaching people how to function in the world. This is all stuff that I had to teach myself and learn on my own because I wasn't getting it from my parents, and my coping mechanism was dogs. So it was just one of those things that I always felt like I had kind of an innate relationship with animals because I spent so much time with them that, I mean, it's like with anything else, you spend enough time doing something, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
So being able to pick up on the signals and then understanding what they were asking for at a really young age was something that kind of helped develop the training skills that I learned from, honestly, I don't even remember where I learned most of it. It was just stuff I've taught myself everything I know. In terms of training dogs, I've picked up little bits here and there from trainers, but
yeah. You pick it up from sources. You pick it up from life. It's not like a course. Yeah,
I'm very much I like doing things on my own and learning them the hard way. and if I get stuck, then I'll ask for help. But I'm kind of bullheaded like that. I love learning like that. It does make things more difficult. I mean, sometimes I've learned 1,000 ways to not make a light bulb, but it's more of the experience that I get along the way and what I'm getting out of it just personally for myself. It's what's satisfying to me. So when I eventually started training, the dog's name was Rust. When I eventually started training him, it was almost like second nature. I just picked right back up on the cues, and within, how old was he? He was almost 2 when he competed for the first time.
Wow.
I didn't get him until he was about a year old. So,
still a year of training.
I spent a year of training, and he did absolutely phenomenal his first day out there.
That's cool.
There was a bunch of seasoned dock dogs out there that had no control at all. And I was like, wow, I could have just brought him back when he was a year old and we could have just gone out and had fun. But I decided I wanted to take a fully trained dog with me.
So, good for you, though, wanting him to be able to be behaved and handled.
And it was nice because, you don't realize how well your dog is behaved until you have him out in public and everyone's like, wow, your dog is so well behaved. And I'm like, oh, is he? I think he's an asshole. So it's nice getting to see that, because you kind of get an understanding that there's a lot of people out there that have really, really terrible relationships with their animals. And I don't mean to make it sound rude, but I mean, at the end of the day, there's too many people out there that try to personalize their dog and make them human or human-like, or what they're doing is like adorable, like my chihuahua's growling in my face, I should keep petting it and making it pissed off, and then they wonder why their kid gets bit in the face 2 days later. And
it's reinforcing, you put
two and two together.
Yeah.
Positive reinforcement is definitely hands down one of the best ways of training your dog. There's no need for you to ever hit your dog,
which is why, yeah, you encourage the things you actually want them to do. I mean, it's not a difficult concept. You
have to actually teach them what to do. It's no different than having a really young child.
Except that child won't eventually understand what you're saying.
Yeah. If the kid puts a fork in the electrical socket, you can either tell the kid not to put the fork in the electrical socket, or you can be that parent that's just going to sit back and watch what happens. But you also have to remember that that's not the right way of doing it. You can't just let your kid do that, or you can't just let your dog do that, because while it might be entertaining for you at that point in time, it's reinforcing that type of behavior. Like, it's okay to keep testing the limits. It's okay to see how far I can push the boundaries.
Becomes an ingrained, reaction for them.
Yeah. And a lot of times you end up having to train people what to do to help teach their dogs how to behave, because there's so many dogs that have no boundaries when they're in the house. I can't tell you how many times I go over to people's houses and they're like, oh, sorry, my dog jumps up on you. Why? It's not difficult to train that out of an animal, but you have to be consistent with it. And that's just part of having a pet.
So assuming you had the space and budget, was no restriction.
Belgian Malinois.
Fast answer.
Oh, I already knew where you're going with that one. I've wanted a Belgian Malinois for a really, really long time, but it is not an easy dog. They are extremely intelligent. They are even more athletic than they are intelligent, and they're the smartest dog breed on the planet.
So they're the Velociraptor of dogs?
Yeah, Maligators. I mean, they might not be the most intelligent. I definitely think poodles are up there, but they're extremely
smart. Which is weird to say.
Yeah, I know. They're extremely smart. And I guess I want to see if I have the mettle to actually train a dog like that. I've worked with German Shepherds. I've worked with Blue Ticks. I've worked with Irish Setters. So there's definitely a wide range in there, but I've not really worked with anything quite that crazy. And I'm really ready for the challenge. I just need a little bit of space to be able to do that. Otherwise, yeah. Here at the current place, I would have a dog that ran up 3 flights of stairs every single day and never get tired.
Never.
Yeah. We'd have to build a tube that goes straight down to the bottom so I can just drop the ball from the top floor and have it go down to the bottom just to tire him out after 4 hours.
All right. So there's this segment I call the moment of vulnerability.
Uh-oh.
I know, right? What motivates you in life?
That's a great question. Honestly, I think the first 32 years of my life, I spent doing things for other people. Actually, no, it was probably the first 30 years of my life I spent doing things for other people. And it got me nowhere. I constantly got hurt. It was just like one thing after another after another. There was just so much drama in my life. And I think when I turned 30, it finally just clicked. Like, I have to start doing things for myself.
You have to take care of yourself as well.
So I completely changed everything around. I went from using cheap soap and shampoo to like actually taking care of my skin, taking care of myself. I became more active. I started doing things that I wanted to do as opposed to what other people, or at the time my girlfriend, wanted to do. It was honestly just kind of me having an ego for a little while and deciding, like, you know, this, everyone else, what am I going to do to get myself where I want to be?
You went the other extreme before trying to find that balance.
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't have any type of social experience growing up. Up until I was in high school, I was in like an actual little cubicle, in school, with dividers in between me and the next student. So when it came to social interaction, I had about a half an hour of good social interaction with my friends every day up until I was 9. And I also had ADHD. So for someone like that, closing them off socially is detrimental to them.
Oh, absolutely.
And even through high school, like, I didn't have the best social experience because, like, I didn't know how to socialize with people. I was very awkward. I was very weird, I guess, just because I didn't have the same social cues that everyone else had already learned how to use.
They were in, you know, regular public schools most of their lives. You were some giving of them, it.
Yeah. And it was difficult because these people came in and they were instantly popular. And I'm like, well, what the hell? Like, I know these people my entire life. Like, why are they getting along better? And it was just, it took a lot of introspective thought to kind of figure out what was going on. And thankfully, I learned pretty early on that I just had no social awareness. So I went out and made as many friends as I could. I tried as hard as I could to not be an antisocial person, even though that's all I wanted to do. When I was 20 years old, I was 100% an introvert. I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't know what was normal when I went out to the bar. Like, the first time I went to the bar when I was 21, I didn't even know how to go up and order a drink. Like, I was like, what the fuck is this? So quickly learned how to go order a drink at the bar. That became a solid staple. Doing things for myself should have been a priority back then, but I didn't understand what it was. I spent most of my life growing up in a church school, so it was do unto others. It was never do for yourself, never take care of yourself, never shape the decisions that you're making today based off of where you want to be in 10 years or 20 years or 2 years or a month. It was just do for right now. And as people mature, especially myself, yeah, I just got to the point to where I wanted better for myself. I wanted to not have to worry about just the small things. It's honestly just that, like, I didn't want to stress over where I was going to eat my dinner. I didn't want to stress over what I needed to get done that day. It was just all getting so tiresome that I had to do something about it. And stepping outside of that and just being selfish for once and doing things for myself that I ordinarily wouldn't have done definitely helped give me a lot of boost to get kind of my ass in gear and start doing something for myself. And by no means does that mean I stopped caring about other people. I mean, obviously I still try to do everything I can for everyone when I can, but there's definitely not as much guilt there if I can't help someone or go outside what I would normally do to help them. I have to pick and choose my battles now and hope for the best.
What I've definitely seen change in you is in putting yourself first, you're learning more about the things you want to learn about. Your thirst for knowledge has just been unleashed. And that's that's kind of where I would probably say a fair amount of your motivation is just wanting to know more, that desire to
I'm an infinitely be curious person. It doesn't matter if, like, even if I go down to the river during the summer or I go up in the snow during the winter, I'm always looking at the small things around. I want to know how it's working. I want to know what's going on. It's just, I'm curious about everything that's going on, whether it be why ants are going that way or why planes are flying that way. There's just this constant curiosity in my life
And it shows in your photography as well, which I wanted to mention is some of the absolute
fucking. Is that where best. You thought I was going to go?
I was torn between photography and cars.
Those are both definitely things that I am also very, very passionate about. However, the cars thing is more just kind of from a distance. Race cars are expensive. Anyone that has one knows that's probably why it's not running. And then photography is something that's always kind of been near and dear to me. I love taking pictures when I was young because every picture that someone takes is their perspective on the world around them. People take so many photos of big, beautiful landmarks like waterfalls or tall buildings or special signs because that's something that's important to them. That's something that they want to hold a memory of, and it's a part of their life. It's a part of the perspective of their life. And photography for me is just kind of my perspective and what I see as beautiful. I want to take pictures of it.
Your cannabis shots are amazing as well.
Yeah, I can't wait till I get an actual camera that I can take some really good pictures with. But I love taking pictures of anything and everything I can, whether it be on a macro scale or like a full-on landscape. There's so many different things that you see on a daily basis that are absolutely gorgeous, but you never get to see it in the right perspective. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people tend to lose focus on a day-to-day basis is perspective. You go through your life every day and there's millions of things going on around you and you can't possibly analyze all of them. But when you finally do take a second out of your day to do that, you see a big, beautiful world around you that's full of anything and everything you want from it. It's what you shape it out to be. And I feel like photography is a way for me to kind of express that. There can be beauty in the head of a trichome, or there can be beauty in the way that a mountain looks. And it's honestly all about your perspective and what you're looking at.
Well, I encourage you to keep exploring your perspective because it's made some fascinating work so far.
Oh, I can't wait to get it. It's going to get better. This next year, we're definitely going to try and step the photography game up a little bit.
All right, we're getting towards the end here. So I wanted to ask if you had any personal philosophy on life.
Personal philosophy on life. It's not hard to be nice to people. It's really not. Like, we're all eating a shit sandwich every day. We all get up and go to work and we do things that we don't want to do for people that we don't want to do them for. And it's not hard to be nice. Like, we're all struggling right now. Everyone is. I mean, obviously Jeff Bezos isn't, but that asshole ain't got nothing coming his way right now anyways.
He hasn't known a struggle in a decade or so.
Oh, yeah. But just keep your foot planted, stay positive. There's too many things that you can pick and choose to get upset about. And the mindset and how you approach that is of the utmost importance. If you have a negative mindset about what you're going out to do that day, you're going to have a bad day. You might not get up and love what you do at work, but you might have someone at work that you enjoy spending time with. And that might be the only thing getting you through your day. But if you have a chance to not be an asshole to someone, take it.
I will give this to you. I've seen you use that do unto others very well for the most part. You have a kidding tone sometimes that I think you like to stab people with. And
I'm a little dramatic.
I think that sometimes that gets taken the wrong way. But for the most part, you do focus on bringing that into your day at large.
Yeah. I spent so much time stressed out and upset when I was younger that I hated it. Like, all I wanted was just to be happy. I've constantly been chasing that happy feeling that everyone's looking for and realize that it's not something that you just magically acquire. It's something within you. It's your mindset. It's what you're approaching your day with. And picking and choosing the battles that you have to be successful that day. If you have something that gets thrown at you sideways, like for instance, this morning I showed up to work, there was a big pile of smelly liquid on the floor. I didn't want to fucking clean it up. It smelled like ass. But I also knew that the sooner I got it done, the less I had to smell it, the less I had to deal with it. And it was just something that needed to be done. And
instead of letting it ruin your day.
Instead of letting it ruin my day, I went over and had some fun with it. I splashed some water on the ground and made some people laugh while I was doing it. So I tried to make the best out of a shit situation. That's kind of how you have to approach life. Like if you're struggling, you've got to be able to put your best foot forward. And like Dory said, you just got to keep swimming.
I like it. Well, that seems like a pretty good place to end this. Any last words or shout outs, anything you want to share?
Thanks to my mama for making me who I am today. there's a bunch of people I would say thank you to. I don't have that capability right now. That dab that I took before we started got me feeling some type of way. So no, I don't really have anything super crazy to add. I do want to thank you for having me on. It's
thank been you fun. Again for being here, man.
Yeah. I wish you the best and I hope things keep going good for you.
Thank you. It was very good to have you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. I had a great time sharing cannabis passions with Chris, and I hope to have him back again someday. I want to thank him and also give a special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on YouTube, or wherever else you're listening, and please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Every podcast says that because it really does help with visibility. You can support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. Thanks again, and have a blessed day.